Hello and welcome everyone to a mystical journey to the Sacred Sites Global Summit. We will journey to beautiful sacred sites with healers, shamans, scientists, doctors, wisdom keepers, and coaches to gain wisdom and healing to self, the collective, and our divine Mother Earth. During the course of this event, you will learn that a sacred site is not only an external place or structure, but also our own body. You may have heard of the term, your body is a temple. Therefore, we will also journey inwards to access our internal sacred sites, for example, our sacred heart. You will hear experts talk about their own healing journeys and the work they're doing to raise awareness and consciousness of individuals, the collective, as well as raising the vibrations of our great spiritual mother, Gaia, to create more joy, peace, and abundance for all sentient beings on our beautiful and divine planet, our home. I'm your host and the creator of this event, Ami Sohi. And before we begin, I would like to take this opportunity to thank Jocelyn Starfeather for her tremendous mentorship and guidance during the creation of this summit, without whom I would not be able to present today. I'm also very grateful to all my family and friends for their unconditional love and support throughout my journey. And last but not least, I'm very grateful to all of you for taking the time and having the courage to be here today. So thank you. Without further ado, I'm very excited and thrilled to present Isis Indriya. Isis is an educator for ritual, divination, Egyptian cosmology, and Hermeticism. She is founder of the Academy of Oracle Arts, where she leads her 9-month signature apprenticeship in Oracle Arts and teaches many classes alongside other luminaries. She also leads annual pilgrimages to Egypt and hosts regular community prayers and gatherings at a temple in Northern California. As a community bridge builder, she's also co-founder of Imaginal Community Platform and is on the board for Water Now, Church of the Essence, Living Village Culture, the Oracle Clan, and is an advocate for the Fountain Earth, Bioneers, and Unify. She's also lead curator for the annual Compass Lightning in a Bottle Festival. Isis dedicates her life and service to prayer, ritual as a way of life, education, and community activism, bringing ancient knowledge into modern practice. Isis's multifaceted work harnesses her skills as both a practitioner and culture maker, enabling her to bring holistic practices within dynamic and accessible forums. Through her work, she facilitates cultural and social evolution at local and global levels. Indigenous to the island of Guam, she moved to the US at the age of 17 and began her studies in mythology, which led to her finding her pathway to ancient mystery studies, sacred sciences, and earth wisdom tradition. She then studied extensively in a diverse range of subjects, including whole systems design, shamanism, practical alchemy, transpersonal healing, and ritual theater. Her passion for travel and learning about diverse cultures, combined with a deep respect for the lands and the indigenous people who inhabit them, has created a role for Isis to serve as a bridge builder. She has a unique ability and drive to connect this and the next generation to honored elders, lineage holders, and wisdom carriers of various traditions. Isis has been working in event production for over 20 years and has a professional focus on using the power of gatherings to inspire potent transformation and to create culture by doing so. From concept to completion, Isis reliably creates impactful spaces for all who experience them. You can learn more about Isis's work on her website, the Academy of Oracle Arts. So please do go ahead and check out Isis's website. And Isis's topic for today is a journey of offerings and initiation to the holy land of Kemet, otherwise known as Egypt. Welcome, 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 Isis, to this beautiful sacred space. It's an honor and pleasure to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real blessing to be a part of this amazing summit. And, we're tuning in from different parts of the world. And so I just want to say thank you to our homelands, our ancestral homelands that are gathering us here. I'm here in the Nisenan ancestral homelands, also known as Nevada City, California. So thank you for having me.
It's an honor and pleasure, Isis. Welcome once again. So, Isis, to kick off the conversation, I'd like to ask you the question: what led you to Kemet, otherwise known as Egypt?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because there's like the example of the moment that it happened, and then there's a journey that led to it. Part of what's led me on my spiritual path, first and foremost, is my mom dying at the age of four. Losing her at such a young age really inspired me to want to understand what is on the other side, what death is, or can I still connect to her from the other side? And then with that on my journey, I'm a Chamorro woman coming from the island of Guam. So I say Hafa day to everybody, and I come here on behalf of my ancestors. Coming from a Chamorro culture on the island of Guam, I also in my lineage lines are connected to doing this type of work, both on my grandma's side and my grandpa's side from my dad's side. So it's also part of it, But the moment in life where it happened, where the journey really just started happening, was I was 18 or 19 years old. I was living in Seattle and Wallingford, studying transpersonal psychology, studying Stargates, and studying Ascended Masters at the time with Maggie Huang. She was my teacher. She lived right down the street. And so I'd go to her house and study. And she was deciding to go on a journey to follow her teacher to Kemet, to Egypt. And at that point, I didn't really know why, but I just kind of got this calling that I needed to kind of drop everything and go. And so my partner at the time, we sold everything, moved out of our house, and following her teacher to Kemet, Egypt. And we went on this 3-week trip. I didn't really know anything about Kemet. And we went on this 3-week initiation journey. It was pretty calm at the time. There wasn't a lot of tourists, at least from what I can remember. And it was a trip that changed the entire course of my life, like 100%. And since then, I'm 44 now, about to turn 45. That was around 1918, 1920, somewhere in there. I don't know the exact date, which age I was, somewhere in there. 19. I've been on a journey of learning because it's just continuous. I'll never stop learning about Kemet, Egypt. So that's what got me started.
Well, yeah, I'm also very fascinated with Egypt, with ancient Egypt, full of mysteries and magic and hidden secrets, which are being revealed now to us. So I know you do these pilgrimages, right? Annual pilgrimages to Egypt. So why are you devoted to journeying there annually?
Through my devotion to learning and understanding the medicine of this holy earth and also the divine, my relation with the divine, the sacred, to commune with the sacred. Through all of the different pathways of study, Kemet, Egypt was always a consistent one throughout the years. And really, what led to the devotion to continuing to go is I'm a student to also this crystal ball called the Oracle. It's an oracle crystal ball, and that's why where the School of Academy of Oracle Arts came from. And it's a devotion to this crystal ball and who I'm in communion with. The crystal ball started giving me a lot of signposts and guidelines, which led to co-creating with a dear friend of mine, Jesse and Tamer, a big event in 2012 where we had about 111 people on a 2-week trip and 350 people at the base of the pyramids for 3 days. And we did this really big event for 2012 in alignment with Unify. Adam Apollo came, and so we did this global sync up with events and of sacred sites all over the world, and we focused on the Kemet, Egypt one. And during that time, you know, and throughout that, my period, you know, last 13 years, spent a lot of time studying with Indigenous wisdom keepers, wisdom carriers, and elders. And I remember this one climate conference that we did, where one of the elders said, you know, there's a panel of about 13 different wisdom carriers and elders. And one of them said, you know, part of why we're navigating this dynamic with the climate and with the holy elements and the weather is connected to there being a lack of offerings to the sacred sites. People not going there to make offerings, to give. And this, you know, this my extractive mindset to go to these sacred sites and extract from it or get from it or mine from it. And that really struck me, you know, it still has, and I'm still learning about what that means, you know, because what is a true offering, you know? And one of the things that I've learned from my studies in ancient Egypt and Kemet and the work of Heka, you know, a true offering is an offering that comes from our sacred breath, whether it's our words, our songs, the intention that we put into the offering that we make. Because even if we make an offering of an herb or a plant or a medicine from a faraway place, you know, I was told that it's nice to bring offerings from faraway places. You know, if we bring some cedar from over here, these homelands, what makes it an offering from me is my words, my breath, my attention, and my intention that gifts it. And so since that conference, I made a commitment to go on behalf of the directive of the Oracle to go every year. And I do that. I go to make offerings. And with that, not with needing anything, but to do that in and of itself, with that, so much is given, you know, there's like a natural reciprocity that occurs. And so I'm really lucky and blessed to get to learn there consistently with the groups.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that's amazing. Why I go to do that. And in the old too, in my research and studies in ancient Egyptian tradition and culture, so much is about offerings. You know, they're constantly making offerings. That's what they do there, you know, in the old ways. And part of those offerings are to help maintain and sustain the relations between the human, the natural, and divine realms. And us as humans making those offerings to the natural world and making those offerings to the divine are what help maintain those relationships. And so it's also a very, very old practice. It's like in hieroglyphs on the walls. So I feel like I'm just doing my best to continue with how it was and on behalf of what feels to be really important and relevant in the now. They say we got to go back to go forward, understand where we come from, our origin stories, what we used to do, and how there was a way, a very sophisticated, eloquent way to maintain those relationships of the as humans with the divine and natural world, to co-shape together, learn from each other, and do the practices to help make of heaven on earth, which is very much about what Kemet Egypt is about. You know, studying the cosmos, the heavens, and mapping them on the planet earth very literally. And then all the prayers and the offerings and the practices to feed and nourish the relationships of heaven and earth unified together.
Wow, beautiful. So do you feel that you know, by going there, making the offering, you know, we're also like raising the vibrations of that sacred place? Because you said earlier that because we have not been visiting the sacred places or making these prayers and offering, the vibrations have lowered. Would you say that's true, that the sacred sites are calling us to raise, you know, for ascension? And actually,
yeah, it's interesting. I didn't quite mean in a vibratory sense, but I do feel like that's a part of it. The way that I was, that this elder shared it with me, you know, so that's the best that I can do and then share my own experience. But the way that this elder shared it with me is that there's this really beautiful a way to maintain the ecosystems and the balance of the sacred earth through learning about the intelligence of the natural world, learning about the land with the indigenous, and then also the sacred sites that are connected and a part of that, because there's this grid, you know, of these sacred sites all over both with like, you know, temples, stone temples or built temples with like holy mounds and holy mountains, you know, and that there's a really incredible geometric mapping system of these sites, and that they're like living beings. And then when they're not fed or made offerings to or tended to, they're hungry, you know, or they're not like receiving that care, kind of like how we are, you know. When I'm not fed, I get hungry, and over time I lose my life force. And so in that way, when we feed each other and nourish each other, human and non-human, we help support the health and vitality, wholeness and wellness of each other, human and non-human. So in that way, it's an upliftment of the vibration together. Now, you know, I feel like it's so profound, the teaching there in and of itself. Like going even to one temple, where, you know, one temple is a full, you know, circuitry system of one of the Netadu, the divine beings, the divine principles. You know, we go into one temple, and the way that I've been taught is you're stepping into the circuitry and the system and the embodiment of the divine Netadu, the being. And so in that in of itself is, you know, in my opinion, an awakening or a transmission of that divine principle inside of ourselves. And that's just one temple. All of Kemet, of Egypt, is mapped that way. It's just like fascinating. And that's not even talking about the pyramids, you know? So in that way, going to make offerings is a way to, you know, just aid approach the holy lands, you know, everywhere. Everywhere is a holy land, you know. It's a way to approach. And in that, even consciousness of going to make offerings, that consciousness alone shifts the way that we enter into anywhere, you know. So going there to make offerings, to give something first, and then stepping into the holy lands and the temples or the holy places, it's almost like the awareness and the ability to attune to the vibrational upliftment that can occur happens in a whole new way. It does for me anyways. Changes my lens upon how I approach anything. And, you know, I do feel like these sacred sites all over the earth, and, you know, even to like the, you know, Kemet, Egypt, a lot of people are being drawn there right now because so much of our origin stories are there. Similar to the Amazon, you know, like the Amazon is the lungs of the earth, and all of these tribes all in the Amazon are like speaking up, coming forward, like protect us, protect the guardians of the Amazon. Because you protect the guardians of the Amazon, you're protecting the Amazon because they know how to take care of the Amazon. You know, we don't even know how, you know. So in that way, there's these like beacons that are being sent out. Sometimes I feel like with the Amazon, there's like all these beacons coming out from the tribes there. And then from Kemet and Egypt, there's all these, this beacon of light coming out there. And a lot of these sacred sites to come, learn, commune with our origin stories, serve, support, stand up and protect, you know, so much of this holy earth on behalf of future generations. Because whatever happened, whatever we do right now sends a rippling effect for infinite generations. This is like a big moment in our human story. We all are feeling this, you know. We're all feeling it, you know. True wealth is a wealthy ecosystem all over this earth. And we're learning about how to tend to this place. And part of learning how to tend is to learn from the indigenous that are living and still doing that. And then to learn about our origin stories, to understand who we are, where we come from, what we're made of in this like high tech site, sacred site, like you said, sacred body temple. This is like high tech. Learn about what we are, where we come from, the ancient ways, attuning to the indigenous that have been tending to it for time immemorial here and now, and how to care for things now and have a whole systems reboot, like deprogramming and an upload of a new way of life that's in service to a sacred way of life on behalf of all life moving forward. The future of all life, you know, it's big. So thank you for having this summit, you know, and I do feel like this kind of beacon the energy of these sacred sites. You know, Hugh Newman has this amazing book about, and he's probably done so much work since then on the mapping of the sacred sites all over the earth. And it's just like fascinating to see the geometric patterning. And, you know, so much has evolved since he did that too, that I know he's doing more work on that because of all of these indigenous mounds and holy places and mountains too. And just the fact that the entire earth has a network like that, where original old peoples, our origin stories, there's these examples of these sacred sites, like, you know, Kemet, Egypt, the Great Pyramid, one of the only ancient seven wonders of the world still standing in and of itself, an eight-sided pyramid, you know, and then there's Göbekli Tepe. And, you know, then there's, I mean, I could go on and on and on and all of them. That's what you're doing here in this conference. And that they're connected. You know, and I was taught once that when you make an offering or you tend to through our life force and our attention and our time, our gestures, our presence, our approach, our generous, authentic, like giving nature, generous nature. I was taught that when you make an offering to a sacred site in that way, it sends a rippling effect to the grid of all of them because they're all connected. And I love that. You know, I don't know if that's what's happening, but I like to feel that. I like to attune my attention towards that. You know, when I make an offering to a particular place in Kemet, in Egypt, that somehow in some way that could be food and nourishment to feed the other ones too. And then the Nile, you know, the life-giving blood of the Nile, you know, these two rivers, the blue and the white Nile, that come together, they form the Nile. And one of the old stories is that, you know, when the blue and the white Nile come together, they form the Nile, and the Nile travels north. That at one point there were seven tributaries. I think there's like three or five now. And they believe that when you made offerings to the Nile, like to Hapi, Hapi's one of the Netiru, the divine principles of the Nile, that then it would go into that river and it would like go up north. And then it would send those prayers and those offerings through the seven tributaries that would then feed and make offerings to all of the waters of the whole earth, because it would nourish every body of water. And so in some of the old stories, they were also like tending to their prayers to the water, because the water is the life-giving blood of the earth and of us too, you know, the life-giving holy waters. So it was the sacred sites and their mapping system all over Kemet and how that mapped the cosmos combined, and all of the different temples that were an embodiment of the Netiru, to come together for initiation in the Great Pyramid and you know, Saqqara and the Sphinx. And then also when he made those offerings to the water, then it fed all the waters too. So it was a way to commune with the sites themselves and the holy waters of life-giving holy waters of the whole earth. And so then what we would do as humans, you know, we're made up of the earth and the stars, we're made up of the water. Coming into this offering consciousness and way of life, and like, making an offering to, you know, a temple through our breath, our attention, our time, our generosity, our words, our songs, then we go into the temple and we attune to the circuitry, the system, the embodiment of the Netiru, the divine being in that temple. And then that wakes up something inside of us, since we're made of both. So it's really, I mean, I could go on and on and on. It's this really just quite eloquent, beautiful, sophisticated, deep way of approaching life and death, and life that feeds death, that feeds life again. Because that's the other thing, you know, there was so much about honoring death. And I feel like in this time in our human experience, we keep death far away, but death is the only thing that is certain. The only thing we actually know is that we're going to die. We don't know when, we don't know how. Everything else is such a great mystery. And so there was this really, in the ancient studies of the ancient Egyptian that I study, is like getting to know these, building a relationship with the great mystery, the great unknown, attuning to the majesty of death, and attuning to the way that we lived our life in accordance to cosmic law, cosmic truth, cosmic order, ma'at, how we lived our life, because how we lived our life also fed and nourished the great work of transformation through death that supported the transformation of a soul on its journey to then become a butterfly to commune into the celestial kingdom with Osiris. You know, there are three rivers. There's the Nile River, the Duat River, and the Celestial River. And they're all feeding each other. So much is about food and nourishment, and how, like, you know, when we eat an apple and then we put the compost in the soil of the middle of the apple, and it goes into the soil, and then that breaks down, and then that feeds the soil. And then, you know, the alchemical process, alchemy comes from Egypt, Kemet, Alchem, Kemet, the black soil, the black people. Alchemy comes from there. And that, like, apple rind, you know, breaks down and into the soil. And then this, over through the magic of the ecosystem of the water and the soil and the earth and the turning, then, like, really good soil is made, and then new life emerges from the seeds. You know, it's agriculture. And that is so much about what ancient Egypt is, Kemet is about, is agriculture. You know, learning about the agricultural, like, intelligence of, like, how the natural world and the ecosystem works, and all of the living netiru or beings that are part of it, and how that works together on behalf of life that feeds death for a new life moving forward. So sophisticated. It's just incredible. I could learn forever because there's just so much to learn, you know, on behalf of this time of our great awakening.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, that's very powerful. Yeah. I mean, Egypt is very powerful. Yeah. The magic there, the alchemy, as you described. And it's all about, yeah, the whole process of life. You know, I mean, death is just part of that process. And as you mentioned, it's the soul journeys on, right? Depending on how we've lived the life to Ma'at, the cosmic law and order. Yeah. Wow, beautiful. There's, yeah, so much to learn from ancient Egypt, and how all the sites you mentioned are connected. It just, for me, it's like, it just reminded me of the trees, you know, how the roots of the trees are all interconnected and feeding each other, and actually, yeah, living from each other. And the sacred sites are the same. So everything, in the whole universe, is, we're all connected. You know, we're not separated at all. Yeah. Wow, beautiful. And
that's really interesting. Sorry, I may jump in real quick.
No, carry on.
Yeah, there's this really interesting, you know, as above, so below, from the Emerald Tablet, Hermes Trismegistus thrice greatest born, Thoth Tuhuti, the ibis-headed Netaru, who wrote the Emerald Tablet. And it's this really beautiful code about the cosmos, you know, as above, so below is a phrase that we've heard often, as within, so without. And one of the, like, very literal ways that I have, I'm learning about that Kemet Egypt followed that, you know, code of the Emerald Tablet from Thoth to Tuhuti, Hermes Trismegistus, thrice greatest born, is that they really mapped the cosmos, you know, the macrocosm. You know, we're on planet Earth. I love thinking about this. We're on planet Earth, moving around a sun with these other celestial bodies in motion, moving forward in the universe, you know? And they really mapped the heavens and how the heavenly bodies and the celestial kingdom worked. And so, and they mapped it on the land of Kemet, of Egypt. So as above, was mapped on the landscape too, through the temples and, you know, I mean, there's more than that, but that's just one example, and the gnomes and things like this. And they believe that a mapping as above, the macrocosm and below, and learning about this body temple, the microcosm as a reflection, as the macrocosm as above, they believe that in mapping it, we were literally making heaven on earth. Through, because we're mapping the heavens on the earth. And so heaven on earth was definitely an awareness, a consciousness to really attune to how heaven on earth, and to make it, and to continue to make it, and to continue to care for it and tend to it like a garden. You know, it's the way we tend to our garden is by tending to it. The way the garden flourishes is by attending to it. And so there's a very active involvement in continuing to support the cultivation and creation of heaven, mapping the cosmos, cosmic resonance on the earth in a very architectural sense, you know, through the entire landscape with all the temples along the Nile with the pyramids and the Sphinx. And, you know, there's a lot of stories of, well, how old is the Great Pyramid? How old is the Sphinx? you know, different timelines in the story of Kemet are related to all the different temples and site parts of the Kemet. But then also we had to tend to that through our rituals, through our theurgy, through our practices and our way of life. It wasn't something we did sometimes. It was something we did all the time. And I think that that's something we're all still learning about too. Like, what does it actually mean to live a sacred way of life in relation to the intelligence of the natural world and the intelligence of the divine realm? And this is something that I feel like we have a lot to learn from indigenous wisdom carriers now, and then also in our origin stories of ancient peoples, how we did this. So we can learn how to do it now, or continue to do it now, on behalf of all life moving forward.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, wow, amazing. So you mentioned earlier that there's so many people now being drawn to Kemet, to Egypt. You know, why is that? Why do you feel that's happening at this time?
We have so much to learn from Kemet, Egypt. I mean, even my teachers and elders that live there, you know, they're Egyptian, that were raised there, that are, you know, one of my teachers, Malchum Goder, he's like a scholar of the rituals, the temples, the prayers, the hieroglyphs, the history. And he's still I love being with him, because we'll be there and he'll have an awakening in that moment. He's been to the same temple like hundreds of times, you know? And I think part of why people are being called there is to learn, you know, to attune to our origin stories, you know, and attune to where we come from, you know. Egypt, Kemet is in Africa. You know, sometimes I think people forget that it's in Africa. Like, people think it's in the Middle East. And I just want to, and then, you know, what are borders really, you know, when we lift the borders, it's a different conversation. But it is in Africa. And so there's something about our origin stories, where we come from, you know, and at what point, you know, there's pre-flood or post-flood too. But, you know, where we come from, and looking, going back to understand the sophistication, when the deep, deep awareness of the cosmos and the intelligence of this natural world as humans, to really get to know and understand who we really are and how we are so infinitely interdependent, connected, and a part of the shaping of life on behalf of attuning to and working with the intelligence of the natural world and the divine. So I feel like a lot of people are going back, you know, the common phrases are like to get an upload or a download or codes, you know, these are common words, codes, uploads, downloads, for sure. And, you know, some of it is, there's this really amazing series called Magical Egypt. And there's this part in it that I think is really quite interesting, where it talks about, particularly with Karnak, you know, a lot of these temples are built at different times, and there's different parts that were built at different times. You know, they say you underneath the temple is an older temple, and underneath that one might even be an older one, you know, depending on the temple. But in one particular, one example is that some of these really sophisticated carvings, you know, like the ram's heads and the rows of the sphinxes, and even the symbol of the Ankh and the symbol of the eye of Horus, Heru, is that just by gazing upon them and looking at them, it opens up passageways in the brain, in the consciousness, the hemispheres of the brain, because they're mapped to in their exact proportions at a different scale to the proportions in our brain. And so even by gazing upon them, this sort of wake-up occurrence, these passageways open up in our consciousness. You know, and I feel like that's a big part of it, especially with our glands, our pineal, pituitary, things like this. They're very attuned to how to work with these particular glands in our brain, which is in our consciousness, that sends messages to the rest of the body. And, you know, at this time, we were all feeling the way that we've been programmed, you know, and how there's a lot of systems that are, we don't agree with, and there's a lot of systems that are breaking down, you know? And in the breaking down of those systems, so must our the programs and our consciousness that we were in our minds that we were designed, trained to function inside of these systems that need to break down, you know? So as this is all like coming down, it's like perhaps the calling, these beacon lights of Kemet, Egypt, and these other sacred sites and these indigenous, the indigenous wisdom carries indigenous peoples are like calling us forward to help us not only like make the transition, you know, we're in a time of transition, but to help us open up more gates in our consciousness. You know, when we change, like what Wayne Dyer says, when we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. So there's this whole, like we were sharing in the beginning, this whole reorientation, who we are, where we come from, how can we serve, learning how to serve, learning what actually serves, attuning to the intelligence of the natural world, attuning to the intelligence of the divine, the cosmos, the macrocosm as the microcosm, and opening up these gates in our consciousness to then support life moving forward, the future of all life. And these lighthouses, you know, these lights turning on, Kemet calling us forward is to be like, hey, come over here. There's a lot here to learn. You know, there is, you know, the Great Pyramid alone, just that. We still don't know how it was built. We still don't understand. That in and of itself is fascinating. That modern day architecture, modern day science still doesn't know how the Great Pyramid has been built. I mean, that, and that it's an eight-sided one, and that it's considered to be the compass of all of these sacred sites all over the earth. Some people consider it to be that. And the timelines in our history of what chambers and mapped up with different star systems, you know, it's also mapping out our relations with our star relations too. The Great Pyramid alone connects with a lot of different star systems. And then a lot of the other temples too, they're mapping with star systems. So like really strong connections and happen, I find, through going there. And then also remembrances, you know, we're like on a path of remembering. Because if the, you know, I've been taught with water that, you know, water never leaves, it changes form, you know, it changes form, which is also like quite fascinating in itself. And so, I've been taught that the wisdom of the ages and the cosmos is inside the water in our body, the waters of this holy earth, the holy water spirit, the wisdom of the ages inside here, you know. And so when we go to these holy places where there's just so much wisdom embedded in the stone people, in the temples, wisdom embedded in the land, wisdom embedded in the indigenous peoples, that some kind of remembrance occurs. We start to remember. And in that remembrance, we start to wake up inside of ourselves. And then like awe, curiosity, wonder, fascination, the deeper mysteries, that door opens, and then the deeper mysteries start to show more, you know? It's like hidden in plain sight. We just need the eyes to see it, the ears to listen, the hearts to care, the like presence to attune. I think that's also part of why these sacred sites are calling us forward, to be present and attune, because there's so many options for distractions in everything. Even like really amazing summits like this, you know, it's like so easy to like almost there'd be too many, or we can't even sit and listen in a real way, because when we're sitting and listening, then we also are doing this at the same time and that at the same time and this at the same time. And it's like part of it is like presence, listening, discipline, focus, attention, to attune to the teachings or the transmissions. But, you know, we make offerings to these sites. I believe that my feeling is that they receive that. And then when they receive that, it's my hope, my prayer always, that when they receive that, then it's like, I feel like they show more, you know, and then I get to learn more. And in the learning, this like remembrance occurs. And then when remembrance occurs, a sacred way of life starts to like teach me more what that means to live like that. And then bring that into wherever I go, you know, as part of my way of life. So yeah, we're hearing the call. Everybody's hearing it.
Yeah.
Wow. In my opinion.
Yeah, I know. My mentor and coach, Jocelyn Starfeather, you know her as well. She goes to Egypt as well every year, and she said this year there was so many people at the Great Pyramid. It was just amazing to see the sheer number of pilgrims, coming there. So obviously there is a calling for everyone. Because that system, the old systems are shedding, falling, and paving the way to the new. And it's time to reprogram and get that information from the sacred sites, from the indigenous elders, who hold the real wisdom where of our origins, where we come from. Yeah, beautiful.
And give
That is
something first,
beautiful.
give something first. I've been really taught that too. I was in India 1 year with at this place where the Ganga, where they say the three rivers, the two rivers, and then Saraswati River come together to form the Ganga. And I was sitting there in a ceremony, and I'll never forget this. The person leading the ceremony was like, in the Western world, we're used to getting and forgetting. And here at this arti, this fire ceremony, we give and we forgive. And in the process of giving, we're forgiving, giving and forgiving. And I just love that. And I carry that with me, everywhere I go.
Beautiful, beautiful. Wow. So, when you're, in Kemet, Egypt, what I know you take groups there. So, what profound, stories do you have when people actually connect with with these divine beings, for example, with Sekhmet, for example? Can you share any stories
I mean,
that you've experienced?
there's so many, but I will share one related to Sekhmet since you brought her up,
Okay.
I could go on and on and on. There's just so many stories, but one thing I am just in awe of every time we go to this particular Sekhmet chapel. We go to this particular Sekhmet chapel in Karnak, and then we also go to this other ch place of hers that I love so much, where at one point there were 365 Sekhmets. But this particular Sekhmet chapel, I just am in awe of the amount of people that tear up in the presence of this living statue,
Wow.
the spirit living inside of this statue. And that in and of itself is profound. Like, I've been to that chapel with many people, like at hundreds for sure, at dip, over the series of pilgrimages and, initiation journeys we've done. And almost everybody either cries just by gazing upon her or feels such an immense amount of energy that they're kind of like to like they enter into another field of energy for a moment. I rarely met a single person who hasn't had a profound experience there. Now, and that's one. And then, when we go to the temple of Aset, Philae. I don't like to share too much about the details of the stories because more on behalf of supporting everybody having their own experience and not being influenced by another person's story. But one thing I've noticed there is, I like to think of Aset, Isis, the Philae temple as the Holy Mother. And I've noticed that through all the journeys that we've done, most of the people have a profound, heartbreaking, open experience. It's almost like they receive the grace and the blessings of the Divine Mother, the Holy Mother, the throned one, Aset, Isis, like nourishes them. And I've noticed that usually when we're leaving the Philae, island, they feel the like grace and the love nourish them versus when they first step onto the island. That's something I've noticed. And I could go on and on and on, but there's a couple. Bits. And everybody has unique experiences, and everybody finds a different kind of depth with different temples and others, I've noticed.
Wow, that's beautiful. There's a lot of healing happens for a lot of people. Yeah, just being in the presence of these divine beings. Wow,
Well,
beautiful.
Chemet is about transformation, like alchemy, Chemet, the black land and the black people. That like it's so much about the art of transformation in and of itself. It's designed, built that way. So by nature, going there, it occurs, it happens. I don't know a single person who hasn't had a profound experience of transformation in Kemet in Egypt. Not one. There might be some, but I don't know of any.
Wow, beautiful. And is there a particular divine goddess, god that you're connected with, or are there many? Because your name Isis, right? Is
Yeah,
that
the name. Yeah, that name was given to me at a very, very, very young age. I was like 17 years old. I didn't even know who she was. It's just as fascinating how I almost believe that that's probably what set me off to Egypt, to Kemet, well, I particularly study the Neteru. That's one of my main sources of learning, the Neteru, the divine principles, the divine ones of Kemet and Egypt. So a lot of times I'll be working and learning from a different one at different times. It's not just one particular. There's so many, there's at least 42. Some lineages suggest 64. Some of the more popular
Wow.
ones that show themselves first are like, usually Aset, commonly known as Isis, or Sekhmet, or Ampu, commonly known as Anubis, Tehuti, Thoth. Those are some of the ones that usually show themselves first. But I would say that, through all of my relations with the Neteru that I'm constantly learning, currently, one of my primary teachers is Seshata. She's the grand architect. I could talk about her forever. She's a great teacher for me. I'm learning a lot from her right now on behalf of very specific things that I'm doing. So a lot of times you can connect to a different Neteru or a divine one based on what you're doing or what divine directive you may have, So her, and then, pretty much the divine directive things that I am doing are in service to Ma'at on behalf of the mystery teachings that I'm carried and that I'm learning from with Thoth Tehuti, Hermes Trismegistus. So thrice greatest born, another name. So with Thoth Tehuti, Sesheta, and Ma'at, currently they are my guides for the offerings and the things that I'm building and learning.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful. I know you have a free gift, for everyone. So can you share that with the audience, please?
Yeah, so what I'm going to offer here is this right here is an Oracle divination board. This was a divination board that was gifted to me in a vision in 2004. And through working with my dear friend Johnny Rappa, it came into fruition as the Oracle Divination Board. And it's a way that we divine to commune with the intelligence of the natural world and the intelligence of the divine. Not in the context of fortune telling, but more to ask questions, what offerings to make, ways to attune to how we create a life moving forward. So we're going to be doing a live Oracle Divination Board session. And in that session, the community will come together to come up attuned to three specific inquiries. Not like the board doesn't answer in yes or no, but it does answer in response to inquiry because it really supports free will. That's why we're here. We have free will, So we are going to be inquiring with the board with three questions together, and then we'll do a live reading. It's fascinating. A lot of information that comes through. So yeah, that's what we'll be doing.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, so for everyone, the link to Isis free gift is available below the interview. So do check that out and claim your free gift with Isis. So Isis, are there any kind of last words for the audience before we wrap up, before we close?
Really, I mean, I don't really have any specific final last words, but I do want to share that, just say thank you to everybody for being born at this time, for choosing to be born at this time and for choosing to come to the summit and intend offer your time and your attention to all of the incredible things you'll be learning throughout the summit. And thank you to you, Ami, for having this vision to making this happen. I really feel like what is being shared here is going to help us, you know, help us help each other, uplift us, help us attune to the majesty of this holy planet Earth and all of the incredible, sophisticated, sacred sites, and how to attune to the cosmos. And, you know, thank you for making this a priority. And in that way, may everything that was shared in this session and all of the other sessions be of service to each and every one of you, uplift you, support you in your life, and support you in your path of service on behalf of all life moving forward.
Wow, beautiful final words. Yeah, thank you so much, Isis. That was, yeah, beautiful share, beautiful stories, experiences, and the truth that you shared with us, divine truth. Thank you so much. And everyone, thank you for joining us. And I hope you enjoyed this session as much as I did. So I wish you a beautiful day. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Goodbye.